Life's messy. It kicks you in the ass. That's right. I said ass. Jess from New Girl.
Hello, 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 and welcome everyone to another episode of Felonious Pundits. I am Kentad Svensgaard, and along with me, please say hello to Mr. AJ Mass.
Why, hello, hello, hello. I am so happy to be here. I am excited, even if we're going to be spending the next hour or so in Cleveland.
I've heard that Cleveland rocks, AJ, so I was excited for this episode, and we'll get into it. If if you folks are new here, but this is a podcast about the TV program Criminal Minds. Each week we recap and take an in-depth look at an episode of the show. The perspective I'll be bringing you is of one who has never seen the particular episode we are recapping, because I haven't. And the perspective AJ will be bringing to you is the one of a grizzled veteran who has seen each episode many times, many plenty of times. We got a fun one here for you today. We're talking about season 4, episode 15, entitled Zoe's Reprise. Zoe's Reprise.
Reprise.
Zoe's Reprise. I have always said that wrong, and I know that it's wrong, and I always I don't know why. It's one of those words that I will always read that way.
Comedy, right?
It is what it is. Zoe's Reprise, ladies and gentlemen. This one was written by our old friend Owen Lee, and directed by Only You, directed by Charles S. Carroll, originally airing on February 18th, 2009. I came up with an alternative title for this episode, Cavalier in Cleveland.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. That must be the proper and only answer, because I went with the Cavalier Killer.
See? I like it when we're thinking along those lines. This is one of those episodes, before we start, even though, you know, we still have the whole team, it felt like its focus was mainly on one of our cast members today, like almost a solo joint by Mr. David Rossi in this episode.
Yeah, he's certainly the featured player. And you got Joe Mantegna. You might as well utilize him.
Definitely. And I'm dying at some point to hear a Fat Tony accent from Joe, but I'm probably not going to get it in Criminal Minds. Well, although we got a lot of episodes.
So. Don't be so sure.
So let's get started with this thing. We start off in Cleveland. We're at, I'm guessing it's a library more so than a bookstore. It looked kind of library-ish to me.
I couldn't really tell. Look, the unrealistic part of this episode started right off the bat because there were that many people at this reading.
Yes. The oh-so-popular hit book, Deviants, The Secret Desires of Sadistic Serial Killers.
Not just the book, but the 10th anniversary re-release of the book.
Yes.
Oh, come on. Look, I know there's some true crime authors out there who are popular, but this popular?
And yeah, he's got a nice sized crowd there. At least 30 or 40 people.
I am a public I have published two books, author and publisher of two books, and maybe I had 15 at my largest reading, except for one event that I was invited to that was me and an author who shall no longer be named because he did some bad things. This isn't in jail, but if you're an Expos fan, you know who I'm talking about. But, you know, that one had about 150 people, and that was kind of cool. But who reads from the forward? Especially from a 10th anniversary edition as their reading sample. You read from a chapter in the book. You don't read the foreword. And that's what I'll be describing in this book. Like, what?
And there are people in this audience lapping up every word. There's this one woman that I thought was going to be the focus of the scene. Some nice little misdirect that she's just hanging on his every word. See another woman taking notes. And they're really into David Rossi. And so he finishes his little reading, and the lady that's working there is introducing his book, and she'll have signed copies on sale. Again, I would have think that anybody that came to this maybe would have already had their copy of this book that's been out for 10 years, but the signed copies are on sale. So
yeah, that's the thing. Or bring in your old copy and he will sign it. That might work, but I don't know. I guess, having been at these, you would sign a number of copies for them to sell after the fact, so you can sign them in advance as the author.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about
right.
author stuff, but yeah.
So... you got a couple of people coming up and talking to him, and Rossi clearly just wants to get the hell out of there. And it was interesting to me. He tells the woman there, "Hey, Teresa, would you mind calling up my car service?" And this woman is lightning fast, because in the span of the next conversation, I'm going to assume the car service was just already outside waiting on him. Because as soon as the next conversation is over, the car is like ready there for him to go. Teresa go to make this call.
I never had a car service.
Yeah, you just had to make your way there, right?
I had to drive to the tri-state area myself.
So, meanwhile, a young woman walks up to Rossi. She, I described her as probably the last time I'm going to use the phrase adorkable.
Who's that girl?
She has that look, and she says she's a big fan of Rossi's, and he noticed she was taking notes, and she wants to bring to his attention that there's been an uptick in homicides in Cleveland, and she believes that there is actually a serial killer that has become active. And he's figured out rather quickly that she's a criminology student by the way she's speaking, because she's giving numbers and stats on the amount of murders. And she says, you know, we haven't been this busy in Cleveland since the Butcher of Kingsbury run in the 1930s. So he asks her, well, what are the kind of cases? What kind of cases are we talking about? And she tells him, okay, the first one, we got a man shot in a park. Then we had a prostitute found with her throat slashed. Then there was a couple found shot in their car, and then there was a woman killed in a burglary. And so he asks her, well, what three things do profilers look for when they're trying to link crimes? And she says immediately, victimology, modus operandi, and signature. And he's like, good. So in this case, were your victims similar? No, they were not. Was there a consistent MO? No, there wasn't. There was no signature. So, of course, Rossi's like, oh, you know, that doesn't seem like they linked her.
But look, yes, he dismisses her pretty much. Like, oh, well, you know, hey, you keep doing you. Basically, mm-hmm. Keep your chin up. But he does give her his card, which I thought was at least more than just a complete blow off.
Yeah. You can tell he just wants to get out of there, but he is at least saying to her, yeah, he gives her his card and he's saying, look, if you ever need advice, I'm available for that. So he is kind to her, I would say. But yeah, he just wants to get the hell out of there. And he's he's walked out to his car, which I said is already there, ready and waiting for him. And he just tells her, you know, keep studying. Don't stop till you find the answers that you're looking for. And she says she won't. So we're going to now cut to her not stopping.
Well, she's going to stop thinking about tomorrow real quick.
She was on a very short journey. We cut to her pulling up to a house, and it has crime scene tape around it. So we get really quick. This is a latest crime scene. And she goes into to Nancy Drew that mess. Basically, she's crawls under the crime tape and is looking around with her flashlight.
Well, we are simpatico today. I have she goes to Nancy Drew that recent murder. We are working.
That's actually getting kind of scary. So yeah, she's looking around. She sees the evidence tag on the door. I thought she was going to try to break into the house, but she doesn't. And before anything else can happen, she hears an "excuse me," and she's startled by a dude that's standing there. And she's like, ready. She's like, get back. I think she had a little
pepper spray
ready to go in case she needs it. And the guy's like, hey, wait, calm down. I'm just someone who lives in the neighborhood. And this was pretty smart. She's like, okay, what's your address? And he immediately responds with a street address that apparently checked out. But he tells her he wasn't going to hurt her, and he wouldn't have said it, excuse me, if he was. She calms down at this point. She's like, what the hell, man? You're scaring me. You know, like,
dude, you scared me, dude.
Yeah, exactly. And she asks him what he's doing there, which I thought was like, yeah, what are you doing there? And he says, I was walking back from the liquor store and I saw you snooping around. So I just wanted to check it out. And then she says, well, you know what happened here? And he's like, oh, yeah, the poor woman was murdered. I can't believe it happened in this neighborhood. And Zoe's like, yeah, she was raped as well. And there's been a lot of murders going on recently. This is when my hackles were raised. I was like, don't start telling your business. I guess she hadn't gotten to the chapter in a criminology class yet where the perpetrators like to return to the scene of the crime.
I mean, she was ready for it, but she was already disarmed by the fact that this guy is like this weak looking pale guy who was carrying a kind of bag from like a CVS kind of thing, like a little cheapo bodega plastic bag or something. Was it like, mm-hmm. Yeah, he clearly was just walking around the neighborhood. He looked like a good guy, you know, a peer.
He did. But unfortunately for Zoe, this is not a good guy. As she's got her back turned to him because she's saying, you know, she's going to go investigate a few cases. And he finds out that she's not with the police and he's closing the gate and locking it. And Zoe's saying all of these random violent murders seem to be like something weird is going on. And then he says in a voice, what do you mean by weird? So I think at that point she turns around and has a bit of worry in her face. And we are pretty sure that at this point it's going to be curtains for poor Zoe.
Indeed, or scarves, as the case may be.
Yes. We cut to Rossi in his room. I didn't get... He's looking at a paper there, and it has someone named Teresa's number on it.
Yeah.
And he was smiling.
Yes. So if you noticed, his little helper at the book signing was named Teresa. She's the one who booked the service for him. And when he was dealing with Zoe, she looked at him in such admiration at the way he handled this interaction with this young protege wannabe. Yeah, Teresa gave Rossi her digits.
Okay, so Rossi was probably looking forward to a little bit of a hookup that...
Yes. This was a future hookup for the stud muffin we all know. It's David Rossi.
But before that can occur, he gets a phone call. He's like, Agent Rossi, oh, and then he looks like he's not happy to hear some news. And we cut to our crime scene, Rossi arriving there, and he meets Detective Dan Brady, who lets him know that they found his business card on the victim. And of course, as we lift the sheets off of the body, we see that it's Zoe, and he's asking Rossi if he has any idea what has happened, and we go into credits.
Criminal Minds.
It's Criminal Minds.
So we are told again, but via the actual writing, that we are in Cleveland, and we get an opening quote from Rossi. He says, "I never teach my pupils. I only attempt to provide the conditions in which they can learn." Albert Einstein.
Good on you.
There you go.
Cleveland's own Albert Einstein.
Yes, right.
Yes, and as he's giving the quote, the lovely montage of the beautiful sights or sight of Cleveland.
Yeah. Did we get the Rock and Roll Museum?
I have been to Cleveland. I have been to the Rock and Roll Museum. I have been to, at the time, Jacobs Fields. Now, I believe, what, Progressive Field? They change the names every week. But I've been to the baseball stadium for the All-Star Game. It's a lovely city. It is no longer the mistake by the lake. All that said, a good portion of the city is a bit dumpy.
So we have now a conversation between Detective Brady and Rossi. He's giving her the details and trying to find out why Rossi is. I mean, Rossi's trying to figure out what's going on. And he's saying, "Look, I just talked to her last night. I never even asked her her name." And Brady lets him know that it was Zoe Hawks, and her car was right there still. Car alarm was activated. No sign of a break-in. And he's showing him the things that she had on her. And Rossi notes that she had pepper spray but didn't use it. Nobody saw or heard anything. They don't have any witnesses. There was some trauma to her head, blunt force trauma. And then she was clearly strangled with the scarf that she was wearing. And Brady asks Rossi if he has any idea what she was doing snooping around this case. And Rossi's like, "You keep talking like I know what the hell is going on here. What case are you talking about?" Brady tells him about Kayla James, who was murdered and raped 3 days ago there at a burglary homicide. And we get Rossi kind of flashing back on Zoe saying, "I think there's a serial killer here." And then him telling her, "Don't stop looking for until you find all the answers you're looking for." And her saying, "I won't."
Oopsie.
So, yeah. We next cut to BAU office. JJ is showing Morgan and Garcia her baby photos, including one of little Henry wearing a leather jacket that Auntie Penelope was so kind to get him.
And I will say, throughout, this is just another instance, JJ, throughout the entire run of the show, proudly sporting these pictures. The child who ends up playing Henry is her real life son. So these are her real life pictures. Oh. She just incorporates it into it. Her son will play Henry, you know, as he grows up. It's just really nice to see, you know, AJ Cook, like, there's no acting in the scene. This is my kid. Look at this. This is my kid. It's really cool.
Aw, that's good little background. I didn't even think about that. That's cool. So at this point, Rossi calls in, and he was on his annual leave, but he thinks it's over because he's going to send over some files for Garcia to look at, and he wants JJ to distribute them to the team, see if there's any connection between these cases. Cut back to Rossi talking to Detective Brady, and he is remembering that she had a notebook with her that she was taking notes from. Brady mentions he saw it in their car, and he'll let Rossi take a look at it. But first, they're going to go to the house to notify the family of Zoe about her death. So they're going to go over there, and they do, but not before Rossi has another flashback of him telling her, Zoe, that, you know, if she needs advice, he's available. and her saying, thanks, it was an honor to meet you.
I mean, look, I realize that you know, she's dead now, and so it will take on more significance in his mind, but he blew this conversation off. There's no way he's really remembering this as right. detail.
Word for word.
I'm reliving the 45 seconds I spent with this girl in my entire life. Over and over and over. I get it. It's dramatically interesting to have him have a personal stake in solving this crime. Absolutely. It's just a little much with the constant flashbacks. We don't need it. We saw it.
We're cut to them knocking on a door, and it's the home of Sheila Hawks. Sheila is a familiar face, AJ. I didn't look her up. Who was that? I know her from something.
This is the brilliant Bess Armstrong, Angela Chase's okay. mom from My So-Called Life, among many roles. Certainly the most prominent mom role. She kills this character. Her acting throughout this entire episode is spot on phenomenal. And I love when they actually get people who know how to act in these small roles without stealing like the story and say, me. But this is one of the most genuine, real reactions to the next of kin notification news that I've seen.
Yeah.
It's just spot on. Just not hearing right away and then just going full on grief moan. Like, fantastic.
Right. I kind of want Detective Brady here. Like, I understand why he did it, but I kind of want him to at least try to get in the house before he drops the news. Because he basically says it right at the door as she's asking what's going on. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, your daughter was murdered. Like, not even like, let's get all the way in. And like you say, she's of course overcome and oh no, and falling to the floor at this point. So now he has to go help her.
Yeah, I mean, it's different from a big city cop versus a small town cop, I think also. I think the small town cops usually have a more difficult time because they don't have to do it as often. Whereas this guy probably does this so many times. He just knows, let me just rip the Band-Aid off because it's just easier. So maybe that's it. I mean, yeah, it's not the greatest business, but he does immediately go in and supports her. So right. He's good from right. that point on. So I'm going to chalk it up to he's a grizzled veteran at this. And it's just like rip the Band-Aid off because hem and haw, it just makes it worse.
Right. So they let her know that she was found at a house where they think she was visiting a crime scene. And Sheila knows about this activity of her daughter and had tried to dissuade her from it, thinking it was too dangerous, which it obviously was. And so they agree that they're going to take her to the medical examiner's office to look at the body. Rossi asks if he can stay behind. And as we see her walking him into her room, into Zoe's room, she must have known about Rossi as well because she's saying she was so excited to meet you. You're like a hero to her. And so then Detective Brady takes her away and Rossi is looking around Zoe's bedroom. And it's a normal young woman's bedroom. It's a pink room, pictures and stuffed animals and butterflies and a big prominent Silence of the Lambs poster, just in case you didn't get what Zoe's interests were.
She wants to be Clarice, just like every other, it was either going to be Silence of the Lambs or X-Files.
Exactly.
I want to join the FBI and I'm a young woman at this, in the post-90s era.
And of course she has the complete David Rossi collection on her bookshelf. And we see Rossi sitting down at her laptop, which he is opening up. Then we cut back to the BAU office, and the team is talking about all of the crimes that Rossi has sent them. They're all within 1 7-mile radius, but all the neighborhoods are different. Then we see that Garcia has linked into Zoe's computer through Rossi. They go to look at her homepage, and it's a page of it. The first thing she looks at is this crime column by Paula. I didn't write down the last name, but Paula, who we will meet
Paula
later.
McConnell. Paula McConnell. Because we will meet Paula later.
Yeah. So she goes there when she opens her homepage. They can't find any notes based on suspects that she might have had, but they do see that she's been studying crime data in the area. So Hotch is like, okay, everybody, let's talk about what we do know. And so JJ lists through the victims, gruesome photos, by the way, these particular photos that she's going through each one. The first victim was Travis Bartlett, who was last seen at a gay bar, shot at night in a park. The second victim, Lily Nix, was a 34-year-old prostitute, had her throat slashed, and her last name was Nix. Okay. And the third victim and fourth victim were a couple, June Appleby and Troy Wrestler. They were shot in the car in the parking lot outside of a movie theater. And the fifth victim was Kayla James, who we've heard about before, killed in her home, bound, suffocated with a bag over her head, evidence of rape. Of course, the sixth victim was Zoe.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they have to immediately connect the dots that they're going to connect in the next, you know, minute or two of discussion. But like, I've seen enough true crime documentaries to recognize at least two of these as being, hey, you know, that reminds me of.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily have jumped to Jack the Ripper, which is what they do for that. Like,
right.
Because like, that's so long ago. But like, Son of Sam, you know, Bundy, even Zodiac, like there's so many prominent killers and like, you know, BTK. I mean, come on, like you look at those pictures, you get it right away. I don't know.
Yeah.
They work in this field. Reed should immediately go, you know what that reminds me of?
Yeah. I was expecting Reed to do that right away. It's actually after a little bit of talk is Morgan, who's starting to notice something first. He's looking at the cuts on the prostitute's throat, like they're all shallow, unsure cuts. And he seems like when he didn't have a gun, basically he was kind of sloppy and inexperienced. And Morgan says, and that couple was shot in the car. Does that remind you of anything?
Yeah.
And of course, Reed now says, oh, yeah, this is just like Son of Sam. There is a parallel there. And then, like you said, Prentice goes straight to Jack the Ripper on the prostitute having her throat slashed. And then Hotch mentions Kayla James, tortured, raped, bound. It was very similar to the BTK killings. Rossi asks about the neighborhood that the first gentleman was found dead in, and it was in Kingsbury Run, which, of course, we heard earlier in the episode because that was the most famous serial killer in the Cleveland area, known as the Butcher of Kingsbury Run, who found his victims in a gay bar, shot them, and dumped their bodies there.
Yeah, I will say, this is a real killer. The Bad Butcher of Kingsbury Run was his secondary nickname. He was also more prominently known as the Cleveland Torso Murderer, which is just, I'm only laughing because that's a little bit more, I don't know, visceral.
Yeah.
And he was never found, much like Jack the Ripper. Never found. So I'm very happy that they didn't go. And he was never found. Do we think he could still be...
Oh, God.
because they always... Yeah, he's from the 1930s, but do you think he could still be?
It's his son.
Because whenever on this show there's a killer who kind of resembles an existing killer who was never caught, they go, do you think it could still be?
Yeah. So basically what we have are someone who is copycatting famous serial killers. Rossi says he's a serial killer studying serial killers.
Dum, dum, dum.
And Hotch says, see you in Cleveland, Dave.
Yeah, although I will say, as much as the scene was a bit over-explanatory, I did at least like the premise. They were like, all right, on the surface, these don't look like they're connected, but let's assume that they are by the same unsub. What would we be looking for? I did like the fact that they, because, you know, they wouldn't do this normally, much like Rossi poo-pooed it, but like, all right, Rossi's involved, he's asked us to look into it. Let's take it seriously. Let's pretend and imagine it's one unsub. What would we be looking for? And that's how they get there. I like that. That shows that they're competent at their job.
Right.
Even though they could very well be seeing things and connections that aren't there.
Yes. But still, they're pretty much on point here. We, as Hotch was talking to Rossi, the camera had zoomed into another David Rossi joint entitled Frenzy, America's Worst Spree Killers. And I assume now at this point that all of Rossi's books are just like Frenzy or Terror or Insane.
I did go back at that point because I noticed that as well. And I went back to Zoe's bookshelf to see if you could make out all the titles. And it was framed in such a way that you mostly just saw David Rossi's name on the spine, or you saw a treatise of Jack the Ripper, but you didn't see whether there was a word in front of it. So I cannot confirm nor deny.
And then we do a little Criminal Minds trickery where we zoomed in on Rossi's book. And then when we zoom out from that book, it's actually our unsub who is reading the same book at that moment.
You know, if there are that many people in this book reading.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised he was not at the book reading. And I'm actually surprised because that tends to be what would happen in these cases all the time. It's like you go back to that first scene and they're there. You didn't notice, but they were there. They've pulled that trick before. They will pull that trick again. It was not true in this episode.
And then we do get a quick little montage of our unsub doing all the murders all the way from the first guy where he's meeting him at the outside the bar all the way through to him getting Zoe and strangling her.
I like that. And normally I don't like the flashbacks, but for this purpose, it's like, yes, this is our guy. And, you know, if you're going to take the time to take the crime scene photographs from all these cases, why not take a few more extra minutes and add a little extra footage and give these actors a little more screen time?
Yeah, it's only fair. So we're now back at the Cleveland Police Department and the rest of the team has arrived. And Rossi's going to introduce them to the detective, and he's the point guy. Rossi stops as everybody else is walking off to do their duties, JJ, and asks her to help him out with something. We don't hear what it is. We just hear Rossi telling her that it's got to be confidential. We then cut over to Hotch talking to Brady and the team, and they're saying it's not uncommon to have copycat killers. And Detective Brady is saying, well, on this first killer, you know, was supposed to be copying the Butcher Kingsbury run, but he didn't cut up and mutilate the victims like the real guy. And Prentice points out, well, that was probably his first victim. You know, on the first time you're trying to kill somebody, you're kind of frightened about it a little bit. You just want to get it over with as soon as possible and get out of there.
Yeah, it's almost if you want. He's not wrong, the cop, but you almost want to slap him and go, and how good were you on your first murder case?
Yes.
Did you have a learning curve? Did you solve it immediately?
Basically, he's been progressing through this, and he's getting better as he goes along. Basically, if better is probably not the right word, but that's what's happening. He's getting more skilled.
He's learning. Clever boy.
Yes. And that gives them the idea that maybe he's young and impressionable. He could be a student, possibly enrolled in criminology classes, which is kind of interesting since we know that's what Zoe was doing.
It would not be that surprising because even though I, having watched many of these shows and understanding how this works, you know, the scarf was not a weapon he brought to the scene. It was, you know, a weapon of opportunity, but also strangling like that is very close up and intimate, and it's possible that he knew her. So if she was a criminology student, maybe we look at her classmates. It's a good place to start.
And it's funny when you say that, I almost for a split second when they first met, in that opening scene, I thought he did know her. The way she relaxed when she figured out he wasn't a killer, and the way she talked to him, it was almost with the comfort of somebody she kind of knew. But then you realize it wasn't the case. Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. She was way too comfortable with him way too quickly.
Yeah. The next thing we're going to see is a quick shot of our unsub in. I guess he's at a Home Depot or something, and he's munching on a red licorice red vine or something. Twizzler.
A licorice whip.
And he's buying a knife and wire. Just basically picking up all of his serial killer supplies, basically.
It's a perfect commercial for Home Depot, isn't it?
Yeah. When you're ready to kill.
Got some time to kill.
Ooh. So next, we're going to get ready to do our profile scene. And so Hotch lets the detective know they're going to get ready to do the profile. And Rossi seems a little bit disturbed. He's going to not join them on the profile. He wants to go outside and clear his head. So Hotch okays that. Meanwhile, JJ comes to tell him that Garcia did find some students, three male students enrolled in criminology classes with felony records. And so they're going to interview them. But JJ says, no, we don't really need to. One of them is studying abroad. And the other two are back in jail on other charges. And I'm like, so why did you even come to me, JJ?
Just say it's a dead end. Just say it's a dead end. Yeah. Or, you know, please choose your words a little more carefully, Todd. He's studying overseas. If he was studying abroad, he might be the unsub.
Good point. Good point. So we go to the profile scene. Basically, it's a very, thankfully, a very quick scene. Nothing.
Since we just had the profile scene when they were talking to the main cop 2 minutes ago, yes.
Yeah, he's obsessed with serial killers. We already got that. Reed says he'll have some pictures of murders and snuff films maybe on his computer. He probably uses them like pornography. It's a sexual release. Meanwhile, as all this great info is being passed down, we cut outside of the police department. There's a bench that Rossi is sitting at. So Hotch comes up to Rossi. Rossi's feeling down because obviously he's the one that told her, you know, go ahead and investigate. And Hotch is trying to say, look, she probably would have gone anyway. She investigated crimes all the time. It wasn't just you. But he's like, Rossi's like, no, I was the one that basically encouraged her to go that night. Hotch tells him not to personalize it. And he say, well, how is it? I was the last one she talked to. How is it not personal? And Hotch says, okay, fine. Maybe it is personal, but that doesn't change, you know, our job. We've got to go about, how do we go about, you know, finding this guy? And then so Rossi's like, okay, well, we got to find the signatures and that way we can link the crimes. So Hotch says, yeah, he's probably looking at the news, trying to figure out if the police has connected the cases. Let's use that. Let's utilize the media. And that will lead us to getting our killer. And Rossi says, I know who we can talk to. So apparently Rossi is already down with the Cleveland media.
He's working on it.
And we cut to a quick shot of some guy jogging over an overpass. We swing the camera around and we see the unsub is there nearby. And he takes out his little wire setup and starts going off after the jogger. We cut back to a reporter talking to Rossi and JJ. And this is Paula that we were talking about from the homepage. Paula McConnell.
Who in the hell is this Nancy Grace chain smoking wannabe nonsense character?
I thought that's funny you say Nancy Grace. I thought, and I know you're probably going to disagree with this, but for some reason, I immediately thought of Samantha from Sex and the City if she was a reporter. it's not the sex vibe, but it was just the sort of, I could see Kim Cattrall playing her. That's all. That's the only.
Speaking of cereal. As grounded and real as I felt the cop was, as I felt Zoe's mom was, this this bordered on cartoonish buffoonery. This mustache twirling. Ah, smoking, yeah, see? What do you want me to write? See, hey, this is my first game in this rodeo. I know what a signature is. I know what modus operandi is. I gotcha. Like, what was this?
Yeah. Yeah, basically they want her to write about the signature And the reporter is like, I know what a signature is. I know what a signature is, honey, she says. Basically, they let her know they want her to write what they want her to write so that they can talk to the killer through her column. And that's all that's there for.
Yeah, all right. I'll take a stab at it. Waka waka.
Yes, that's exactly what she says. And except for the waka waka.
Not the waka
part.
Waka. Yes.
Meanwhile, they get a quick phone call. Another body has been found. So let's cut over to that scene. And it's Detective Brady, and they're bringing the body up right now. Some teenagers found him. It was the jogger. His eyes are all red, or what's the word?
Petechial hemorrhaging.
Petechial.
If you follow all true crime people know the word petechial.
Okay. That's a new one for me. I got to put that in my true crime notebook.
That just means the eyes are red. It's petechial hemorrhaging.
Yes. They figure this guy was strangled with a wire. And Brady says, is this our guy? And Morgan says, well, yes, because a jogger doesn't get garroted every day.
My favorite line of the entire episode. A jogger doesn't get garroted every day. That is the writer's room going, hey, you know what would be really cool to say here? Let's have someone say it. Morgan would never use this line in his life. But I'm glad he said it because it made me laugh.
Me as well. And that's another word that I will never say right. I say garroted. And I know it's garroted.
Everybody loves Raymond. Oh, you've been garroted.
Yeah. So detective asks, well, which famous serial killer is being imitated now at this point? And Reed immediately, who didn't bring up all the famous cases from before, but he immediately brings up the well-known bike path rapist, Artemio Sanchez from Buffalo.
Even though I do tend to put Buffalo and Cleveland as cities in the same kind of family of cities, no, I would not have come up with the Buffalo backpack.
Bike path rapist.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
More to the point, though, I do think is that they kind of figure out here, hey, you know, maybe he just liked the strangling of Zoe and wants to continue to strangle. That makes a lot more sense to me than perhaps that he has heard of Artemio Hall or whatever his name was.
Yeah. Artemio Hall. So, yeah, that's what they figure out. Maybe this guy, since he's now repeating the strangulation, maybe he's found his mojo, baby, and discovered himself, so to speak. We do get a cut to the unsub who's making himself some more strangle ropes right before we go to break.
I like that, strangle ropes.
We come back. We see that the killer is, of course, reading Paula's article on the Zoe Hawks case, which is talking about how the team has found a signature. And so immediately the killer, instead of reading to find out, oh, what is that signature? He immediately jumps to what he was doing, what is his signature. And we see him flashback. I think that was Zoe he was with, and he starts to nuzzle her forehead. He doesn't actually kiss it here, but we get that he's kissing her forehead. Basically, We cut to Bess Armstrong. I'm glad that I now remember. Now that I'm glad you were able to tell me who that was, because I knew her. Sheila, the mom, Zoe's mom, at the funeral home. The funeral director is being nice to her. They're going to take great care of her. She's all set. And she asks about the bill. And he says, nope, you don't have to worry about the bill. It was taken care of by an anonymous donor. We know who it is immediately.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, if he's pulling that many people in Cleveland, we know he's got the money.
Yeah. Exactly. We cut to who it is, Rossi, who is talking back at the office to Reed. And what Reed is thinking about is, you know, there's no way that Zoe could have known about every single homicide that's taken place in Cleveland. And not every homicide is even reported in the papers. So Reed is wondering how come the unsub didn't, how did they know that the unsub didn't possibly commit other murders? And Hotch says, well, we don't know that.
Hey, I've got this theory. What is it, Reed? Well, you know how this criminology student put together a few notes in her little notepad to kind of identify these murders? Maybe we should use the resources of the FBI and the Cleveland Police Department to see if there are more that fit the profile. Hey, good idea, Reed. Why didn't we think about that until 40 minutes into the episode?
But at that moment, before we can get too further along along these lines, Sheila walks in, or at first JJ walks in. Hey, Rossi, heads up. She knows.
Ka-ka!
And Sheila's right behind her, and she is pissed. She doesn't want Rossi's money. She doesn't need Rossi's money. She's taking care of her daughter. She's her responsibility. She doesn't need any help. Rossi doesn't even know her. Rossi says, oh, you know what? He looks a little mortified. I'm sorry if I've offended you. And she says, just leave us alone. And she takes off. Detective Brady comes in, lets them know they found another body. This one has strangulation marks. So again, another strangulation we have. And so we go to the new crime scene, and this just happened. The bruises are recent. There's no other signs of trauma. And Brady points out, well, it's not on a bike path. They're like, no, at this point, he's found what he enjoys doing. He's not mimicking anybody anymore. He's just getting his own style.
Because I already made the t-shirts that said bike path killer.
Yeah. Oh, dang it. Meanwhile, the medical examiner comes over. Hotch points out and asks if he could take a look at a spot on her forehead. The medical examiner, who I guess didn't notice it before, is like, oh, well, that is strange.
In fairness to the medical examiner, he has not looked at the body yet. They told him not to touch the body until they got there. So he probably did not give it a look yet. So
they
not
did mention that.
Smirching this medical examiner. Yeah, it is quite apparent. This is a homeless woman, it appears to be, who is filthy from head to toe, except for this clean, clear patch in a circle on her forehead. So, yes.
You're right. They did say that. Otherwise, I was thinking this guy is no Quincy. We cut back to the police department. They're saying, okay, he's escalated his crimes. 3 murders, 3 days. Something's got him riled up. It's got to be some kind of maybe drastic change in his life. He's lost control. And Prentice says, or maybe something he gained control of, like himself. He defined himself now as a strangler, and now he's perfecting his style. He's all excited. And they get a call. JJ lets them know they got a call from the coroner, and what was on the woman's forehead was alcohol. Basically, he sterilized her head. And they're saying, well, maybe why would he do that? Oh, maybe he left some kind of evidence there and he was cleaning it off, which makes sense. And JJ mentions, well, you know, if there was evidence on the last victim, it was washed away by the water. And Morgan says, and then all of the other bodies of the victims were already buried or cremated. And Rossi says, except for one, as the camera zooms in on Zoe's picture on the evidence board. So that means now Rossi has to go to the house of this woman who's already pissed off at him, which he does. He goes to Sheila's house, says, look, I know you don't want to see me again, but we need Zoe's body. That's a difficult conversation to have, AJ.
It is. And again, it acted so brilliantly. I mean, like, it made sense. Like, I'm a proud woman. I do not need your money. I didn't ask you for your money. You do not imply that I cannot afford to pay for this, that I am going to take care of this, you know. But, it, you know, as soon as he goes, look, we are not going to catch her killer unless we do this. And it's what Zoe would have wanted. And she doesn't, like, the look on her face is just like, I can't believe I'm going to let you do this. Like, it's just, it's the perfect, like, he's, damn it, he's right.
Yeah. She is great. She is great in this episode, as you have said. We cut to the Emmy's office real quick. He can't guarantee that there's any problems with the evidence, but he was able to get a little bit of something off of Zoe's forehead. So they're happy about that. They're going to send that evidence off to Quantico. Then meanwhile, we cut to Rossi, who is looking once again at Zoe's notebook. And we hear in her voice, instead of Rossi reading it, we hear her as she's making her notes. The first homicide, the date, and then the second one, the prostitute murder, January 9th. We had this one on February 15th, Kayla James, blah, blah, blah. And then her asking, why are the locations different? And then she says, page 47, Rossi's book, there are no coincidences.
And he gives a little smile. He gives a little proud smile there. I like that.
Yeah, she was doing the work. Meanwhile, Garcia calls, and yes, they did find trace amounts of saliva on Zori's forehead, and they got a DNA sample, and they got a CODIS match. Eric Ryan Olson, 23, Cleveland native, who did do some time for attempted sexual assault, got out on parole 6 months ago. And Rossi's like, oh, we thought he'd be a student. And she says, well, Garcia says he was. He took independent correspondence classes while he was in prison in forensic science and criminology.
Why is that an offering in prison?
Yeah.
I mean, I get you want people to, like, pursue things because prison should be about, you know, this kind of thing. But really? Criminology? How to get away with murder. Welcome, correspondent students from prison.
And she pointed out, Ross Garcia also pointed out that it was an out-of-state school. Did that matter?
Not really. It's online. Probably. So who cares? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
The University of Phoenix. Okay, sure. Whatever.
Right. Exactly. So Rossi says, all right, let's go get the search warrant. And we cut to next the team with the various cops breaching into the Olsen home. Clear, clear, clear. Hotch tells Reed to go check the computer. And he tells the detective they should go talk to the neighbors and find out whatever information they can on Olsen. Meanwhile, Rossi has found out he's been reading his books. So there's that. Rossi, not quite as proud as he was of having having Zoe read his books. Then we cut to a bar, and there we see Mr. Olsen. He's having a drink, and he's giving a dangerous look over to this waitress at the bar. And I'm feeling a little nervous and scared for this waitress.
Indeed. Yeah, I just had a thought about the Rossi in the books and everything. I mean, thank goodness he didn't have the Jordan Todd approach to this. Did I do this? Am I responsible?
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't think I could take it.
I mean, he's almost there with, this is personal. Like, okay, dude, it's not your fault. It's not your freaking fault.
Yes. Meanwhile, Reed has found a calendar on the computer. And Brady has looked at it. It's Al's Ale House. Say that 20 times fast.
No.
Al's Ale House. Yes. It's on the schedule. It's in his calendar for that night. So then, of course, we're going to go to the bar. And we see the waitress from before leaving the bar, telling her coworkers goodnight. And she starts to walk home. We see that she's in a park. There's sinister music playing. Oh, no. And Olsen pops out from behind a tree. So we know it's trouble. And meanwhile, we cut from Olsen straight to Rossi showing his picture to the manager at the bar. The manager is like, oh, he was alone. He left about 10 minutes ago. He was talking to Linda, and he left right after she did. And the manager looks worried for Linda. And we go back to the park, and Olsen is strangling Linda. He's got, was it back to a scarf at this point? It wasn't the wire.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really tell. He was straddling her and kind of, yes, you know, in a dominant position with his hands around her throat. You know, we couldn't really see. It's dark in the park on a lark.
Yeah. Yes. Princess and Morgan are in a car and have just been told about the park. They rush over to the park, and you could see that, yeah, like you said, a dominant position Olsen was in over the girl. I thought the girl was dead at this point. The FBI rushes in. Get off the girl. Stop. Wait. And then all of a sudden we see that the girl is actually alive. And she's like saying, stop, wait. And they're like, what's going on? And Princess is like, what the hell? Why are you, we're trying to help you. And Linda, the waitress, says, that's my boyfriend. Dun, dun, dun. So we have a little bit of a twist here.
Yes, indeed. A nice little twist going into the commercial break. So much to say about these developments. Again, another instance where Morgan and Emily are driving around in a strange town they've never been to before. And yet they said the name of the park. And he's like, well, that we just passed that park right there. How did you know that was the name of the park? Parks don't generally have signs on them that say this is so-and-so park, especially at night in the dark. Like, no, but okay, fine. Like, at least I would buy it if they were looking at GPS or something, which
right.
was not as prevalent.
Has the name.
Then. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, that just irked me. The other thing is that we will find out, you know, she said, he's my boyfriend. We will find out they've been dating for 6 weeks, and I'm torn. Like, so the manager knows Linda well enough to know the path she walks home on a regular basis is through this particular park, but doesn't know this is her boyfriend. Like, either she knows everything about this woman's life or she doesn't. Either she cares enough to know who her boyfriend is, or she won't know what path she walks home. I just don't get it.
Yeah, and you get the impression that this isn't the very first time that they've done this. And
right.
you would think before, if it happened before, she would have said, hey, who was that guy I saw you talking to? You know, something like that.
I mean, you know, I don't know. It just seems silly to me.
Yeah. So now we cut back to the police station, and Prentice is in the interrogation room with Linda. JJ is just like, how could she not know that, you know, her boyfriend is a crazy serial killer? Rossi mentions Kenneth Bianchi, who was one of the Hillside Stranglers. His girlfriend didn't know about him, and BTK's wife didn't know about him. I mean, I'm sure they could have named 500 other yeah. serial killers. Like, don't, I would say generally the wives and girlfriends don't know. Look, if they happen.
Yeah, normally JJ's the one who's with it. I know they just gave her the line as a throwaway line. So you can say something. It's like, well, JJ, I mean, you know, do you know everything about the people that you see on an everyday basis? Forget, you know, Le Montan and all that stuff. Like, you know, he didn't know his partner was gay and they spent 20 hours a day together. You know? Like, people can hide things from people, even people they're very close to. Like, it just,
yeah.
That's just silly. That's just silly. Especially when we find out they've only been dating 6 weeks. So, how would she know? It's not like they're married for 40 years or just something where you could, maybe you could say, well, how could she not know after 40 years? Like, after 6 weeks, of course. Maybe she's seen him 3 times in 6 weeks. You don't know. Let's get a little more info on her side. By the way, the actress playing Linda Shannon Woodward. Good, good long stint on Raising Hope, a fine, fine comedy show that with several other members of Raising Hope we'll be seeing in the next little stretch. Yeah.
That was on Fox, wasn't it?
It was on Fox.
I don't think I watched a single episode of that show. I remember it.
Yes. I'm pretty sure two, I know for sure. I don't remember what seasons they're in, but they're two. Other people from the show are definitely going to be on. So
Prentice is dropping the news to Linda that, yeah, dude is a serial killer, which immediately makes her have to go be sick in a garbage can when she hears this.
Again, a realistic response.
Yeah.
A lot of realistic responses from people in this one.
Meanwhile, a lawyer comes out of another interrogation room and he's saying, against my counsel, my client wants to talk to Agent Rossi. So Rossi says, all right, Hotch, you know, tells him, look, we talked about this guy. He's going to be curious. He's going to ask questions. He might open up to you. So Rossi says, okay, great. I'll keep him talking. And as he goes into the room, Olsen is like, ah, Agent Rossi, big fan. And he laughed a little bit. Big fan. Like he was meeting Chris Russo or somebody. Like somebody listened to on the radio.
Chris Russo.
I don't know. It's first name.
Yeah, I understand you disappeared. There's no way that he's going to be murdering 3 days in a row. Mike?
Oh, God. That's going to be a deep cut for some of our listeners in other countries. But
I have not pulled out the Mad Dog Russo impersonation in quite some time, possibly 2 decades.
So the thing that Olsen is going to do here is try to play it smug. And I got to remember this kid is like 22, 23 years old. So maybe he's not the brightest bulb in the tool shed. But he's saying, how do you know? He said, I'm being charged with 8 murders. How do you know that it's only 8? So I guess he's thinking he's going to be getting some kind of deal if he gives up, you know, any other victims that might be.
He says, my lawyer tells me the death penalty is on the table.
Yeah.
You know, you're accusing me of 8. Maybe there's more, and he knows there's more. So can we take the death penalty off the table? It's actually kind of shrewd for a 22-year-old if you think about it.
All right, good point.
I'm just saying, his lawyer wants to still like go with like, maybe they won't prove it. Maybe they don't know. Like the kid's like, they got me. Come on, dude.
Yeah. So, and the lawyer is just saying, look, you don't have to say anything else. And Rossi tells him, look, I hate to tell you this, but there's no way. We don't need what you don't really have any cards to play here. We're already 3 steps ahead of you. And he's like, oh, really? And Rossi says, yeah, well, we already thought about the fact that you may have killed other people. We know that you wanted to experiment, that you would try to kill as many serial killers as possible to figure out yourself, who you are and what you like to do. And he says, let me ask you a question. How do you know you haven't told me already where the other bodies are buried?
All right. You know, I appreciate Rossi's bluffing here. That they know where the other bodies are. And yes, he is absolutely correct. And, you know, we saw the scenes where they surmise that perhaps there are other killer, you know, other murders they don't know about that he committed. And they were certainly going to look into it. But I think Rossi goes a little bit too far to smug himself. But he's like, maybe you already told us where they are. Like, what? He's not that he's stupid, like you said, but he's not that stupid. Did I?
Did I tell him?
I don't think I mentioned the lake by the oops.
We get a quick scene of Reed, who's still at Olsen's house, and he's telling Hotch that they've been through everything. He doesn't really have anything. And Hotch says, well, you know, he marked up Dave's books. Why don't you check the bookcase? Maybe he's scouting for locations to commit more murders. And he says something about pictures. And they're like, what? And then Reed says, there's framed photographs in his hallway. Nothing else is framed. They all look like originals. Let me call you right back, Hotch. So Hotch says, okay. So Reed is on to something here. Let's cut back to Prentice with Linda. And Prentice is asking about her sex life, which Linda is like, well, that's personal. As if she wasn't being interrogated in a murder case.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's time to give us some details. And she's saying, well, you know, it's completely normal to experiment. And Prentice is like, okay. Sex in a public park, All right. If you want to call that normal, sure, fine. I get that. But what about all the other freaky deaky things this guy has you doing? And she says, well, look, we were just role playing. Every couple has its fantasies. And Princess is like, yeah, but his were about like strangling and raping you. Did you ever stop? Actually, she says other women or women, she says, basically strangling and raping
just
women.
Just about strangling women. And she's like, no, just strangling, raping me.
Yeah. Oh, that makes it better.
Okay. What? Again, not the kink shame. Not the kink shame. But again.
Exactly.
We just told you he is killing people. This is not like because he has this kink and you have this kink, we suspect you of being a murderer. It's like, no, we know he's a murderer.
Yeah, it's unquestionable. But at that moment, Prentice decides to ask her if he kissed her on the forehead, too. And Linda looks a little bit shocked at that and like, how do you know that information? Meanwhile, we cut over to Rossi. And he's asking Olsen if he was sick a bunch when he was a kid, to which he says, yeah, I got strep throat every flu season. And then he was like, oh, wait a minute. Did you just profile me? Did you profile me?
I just got profiled by the great Detective Rossi. Agent Rossi, profile me. Wait till I tell my friends.
And Rossi says, her name was Zoe Hawks, the girl you killed 3 days ago. We found your DNA on her forehead. The lawyer's trying to be like, hey, that won't be admissible in court. And Rossi is interrupting the lawyer like he wasn't even there. Look, I know most people would ask what you did, and I know what you did. You kissed her on the forehead. What I want to know is why. Olsen says, well, why would you think I would do that, Agent Rossi?
Why don't you tell me the name of the movie you want to see?
And Rossi says, that's why I asked if you were sick as a child, because, you know, you're slight, you're pale, you're sickly. And most parents would kiss their children on the forehead to see if their temperature is warm. I also think parents would kiss their kids on the forehead just to kiss their kid on the forehead. But, yeah. But yes.
There's other reasons, yes. To show affection, Rossi. I don't know if they don't do that in your family, but... but yes, anyway, yes, you would use your lips as a temperature gauge. Yes, that's right.
And so Rossi's theory is that he warped that into something perverse. And so did you sit there by Zoe, wait to see if she got cold, and then kiss her like that? And Olsen is like, yeah, interesting theory. It would be great for one of your books. You know, a great first chapter in one of your books.
No, seriously, it'd be great for one of your books. Just keep that in mind, please.
The book about Mr. Olsen, the Cleveland Cavalier. Oh, boy. Meanwhile, Reed has found pictures, and he's telling Hotch about them. It's various different places in the city of Cleveland, and three of them he recognized right away from the crime scenes, and then there's other pictures that he doesn't recognize. So Hotch has him email over. Morgan points out this guy is getting off on those photos. What is he, if he has that, what does he need Linda for? Meanwhile, we cut to Prentice talking to Linda, asking if he had any other strange preferences. Did he ever try to do some other kind of role play with you? She lets him know he didn't really like having sex in bed, so he took her to public places. And Prentice is like, okay, where? And she wonders if she has to tell him. Again, murder investigation. I'm like, you could choose not to, but...
Yeah, you don't have to, but I mean, you know, again, it'd be nice. It would get you off, as it were.
So the key here is the public places that this guy likes to do the deed in are also the places where he committed the crimes. So Linda's going to help by letting them know some of the locations. And so Hotch picks up that information from her. And then he's going to go over to Rossi in the other room give him the list, says he's like, yep, we're not going to be negotiating any kind of a deal with you, because now they have the list, and Rossi reads it. Cedar Park, Edgewater Channel, Cuyahoga Valley Park. And at this point, when he's hearing the names of all these places, Olsen looks like, damn, I'm busted. You got me. Like, he has that look on his face.
There goes my leverage.
Yeah, Rossi tells him, we're going to send some units to those places. And immediately Olsen is like, well, how did you find out about him? And the lawyer's trying to keep him quiet. But he keeps talking, and he's like, is it something I did? They explain, yeah, we figured out you need to revisit the scenes. That's how you get your sexual release. But you also decided to capture it all on film and put it on your computer. So you're kind of an idiot. And the lawyer is like, oh, let's talk about this privately. But Olsen wants to keep talking. He's like, this isn't over. I always knew I'd end up back in prison, just a matter of when. But guess what? You can come and interview me, Mr. Rossi, whenever you want. I read in one of your books, that's how you built your behavioral databases, right? Maybe you can learn something from me. Meanwhile, we see the dogs searching the other areas that they must have been talking about, finding bodies in the ground. We cut back to Rossi and him. He's like, you know what? I'll be honest with you if you're honest with me. And the one thing you always ask is the one thing that I don't understand. Why? I have no idea why. I see some guy walking down the street with a stupid look on his face, and I want to bash him over the head with a bottle. Meanwhile, we see the cops finding more bodies. And he's saying, to me, it's normal. It's weird to me that no one else feels that way. It's all I think about. I can't stop. At which point, this was hilarious to me. The lawyer says nothing. He just gets up, pieces out. He's not going to have anything more to do with this kid.
Like, he's like, that is what we call a confession.
Yeah. It's just the fact that he didn't even say, I'm out of here. I told you to shut up. He just gets up and leaves. I thought it was pretty funny. So that's that scene. Now
Rossi, you know, he said, would you interview me? Yeah. And Rossi basically thinks for a second and then sits down. So presumably he's going to take him up on the deal, because that is what he does. He knows that he's got, actually has someone he could possibly learn from here, because he believes that he wants to know and will be open and everything. So it's kind of like, I guess I have to dance with the devil. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And then we cut to Rossi, who's leaving the police station, and he's basically canceling the rest of the dates on his book tour. Whoever, that's what you get from the phone conversation he just had. And JJ is there. She asks him if everything's all right. And he's starting to wonder why people want to hear him talk about serial killers. Is it entertaining? And is my book doing more harm than it's doing any good? Thankfully, we have JJ here to say, you know what? When I was a senior at Georgetown, I was graduating. I didn't have any clue what I was going to do with my life. And then I went to the campus bookstore and you were there promoting your second book. I sat through the whole talk and I asked you what you were most proud of. And you showed us a picture of a boy from Charleston who Rossi remembers. Oh, yeah. Brent Roberts. And JJ says, well, he was found alive. One of the few. That night I bought your book and applied to the academy the next fall. So, Rossi, you've done good. You did good, kid. That's why people need your books, right? And so Rossi is like, okay, I'll see you at the airport. Because he has one more stop to make in this episode. Make,
but yeah, but nice of JJ to like say, you know, I wouldn't be here being the wonderful JJ that I am if I hadn't walked into your book reading. So why don't you get that tour back going, Mr. Rossi?
Yeah.
Being such a mope.
Yeah. As we now see Rossi at Zoe's grave, and we hear him do our ending quote in a voiceover, Austrian novelist Marie von Ebner-Eschenbach, say it 20 times fast, wrote. Yeah, right. She wrote, In youth we learn, in age we understand. And Sheila comes up. She's there. She sees Rossi. She says, I hear you caught him. Rossi says, we did. She says, is he going to prison? Rossi says, for the rest of his life. And Sheila says, yeah, guess what? It doesn't make me feel any better. He's alive and Zoe's not. But having said that, she would be pleased that you caught him. And Rossi says, I hope so. And a lovely pull out, unzooming, a zoom back ending shot of them at the gravesite and a beautiful tree centered in the shot. I thought it was framed quite well, that last shot. I don't know why it stuck out to me, but it did.
It was framed very well. It was almost like Zoe, the grave reaching up to heaven, like, you know, to the sky, or, you know, growth. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's just I like this episode. I think this is a really, really fun episode in terms of really getting into what happens when you take the case too personal. But like the acting is just really good, and there's an interesting twist in the middle, and it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I think I know what the answer is going to be, but let's check our barometer and see if we think the team has won the case this week. AJ, what do you think?
Well, let's see. They didn't know there was a killer. They learn that there's a killer. They catch the killer. Win!
Yes. That pretty much is, is it in a nutshell. So let's just go on to our next little segment, which is something we call teasing it out. Let's talk about what next week's episode may be in the form of a little multiple choice question.
Yes.
I'm assuming. Unless you've changed it up.
what is the diameter? No. All right. Teasing it out for next week. Kintad, what will the plot be of Criminal Minds, Season 4, Episode 16, entitled Pleasure is My Business? Pleasure is my business. Is it A, don't look now, but that call girl is actually a serial killer, making Dallas Johns very nervous? Is it B, protests in Miami get a bit violent when an S&M club becomes the focus of a church group's rage? Is it C, stand-up comics in Los Angeles are literally dying on stage? Is an up-and-coming ventriloquist to blame? Or is it D, why are customers to a brand new massage parlor turning up dead in Phoenix? This is definitely not a happy ending for them.
Oh, boy. Let us see, AJ. In my head, I want it to be the stand-up comics dying on stage, literally. But I don't think that. I think that would just make me too happy, so I don't think it's going to happen. And I appreciate the joke you made in choice D about the happy endings, but my head has narrowed it down to choice A or choice B. For no good reason, I am going to guess. Actually, I think I would kind of maybe enjoy this story more if choice A call girl was actually becoming a serial killer somehow. Pleasure is my business. That is something I could see a call girl saying. I will go with choice A.
Choice A is what you say. Next week, buckle up, partner. We're heading to the Lone Star State for call girl serial killer activities. Well done.
Wow. Yes. What am I, two for 15?
Actually, you're not too bad. That puts you at six wins, nine losses. Ooh. For the season. You're not doing too badly.
Trust me, folks. If you're doing better than me, I think it means you've seen the show before. Because this ain't easy. AJ, don't make that easy. Cool. I guess that's it for this week, AJ. Thank you so much. And thank everybody for joining us. Glad we're still here. 10,000 downloads and going. Or 10,000 listens, still strong. I thank everybody out there for that. And let's make it another 40,000 by the time we're done. Oh, my God.
By next Tuesday.
yes. But, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please be sure to subscribe to, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Be sure to spread the word. Thank you so much. You can also write to us if you so choose at feloniouspundits@gmail.com. Follow our Twitter at @podcast_pundits. For AJ Mass, this is Kentad Svensgaard saying goodbye and keep profiling.
Wheels up.
Stay true to yourself. An original is worth more than a copy. Susie Kasem.